to talk of Christmas so, but I esteem that there is much that does not retain its meaning here in New Zealand, seeming instead like a faded relic from another time. I think of you receiving this letter, and sitting down beside the fire perhaps, or leaning close into the lamplight to make out the words. Permit me to invent these details. It is a great pleasure always for me to think of you. I assure you that I remain from afar, yours very truly, Crosby Wells. Dunstan, April 1863. Sir, I have passed this week in a melancholy humour, wondering if Alistair Lauderback, our father, is yet deceased, as I expect he is. London seems but a dream to me now. I recall the smoke and fog, and cannot trust my own memory at all. As an experiment last week, I sat down and tried to draw a map of Southwark in the dirt. I could hardly remember the shape of the Thames, and no street names returned to me. Is it the same for you, I wonder? I read in the Otago Witness with some astonishment that you now style yourself a proud Cantabrian. I feel English through and through. Yours, Crosby Wells. Kawarau, November 1863. Sir, I like to think that you receive my words with pleasure, but am content with the more probable event that you do not read them at all. In either case, writing is a comfort to me, and gives shape to my days. I read with interest that you have resigned the superintendency. The word upon the diggings here is that Canterbury is soon to have her rush in gold following Otago's fade, and I rather wonder whether such a discovery would make you regret your decision to step down from that eminent position. The reward offered for a payable goldfield has excited more than one man upon the fields here at Kawarau. The land is steep, and the sky very blinding here. I have been sunburned so often that the shape of my collar has been branded into my neck, and though this is painful, I do not look forward to the winter months, which in this high country will be bitter indeed. If gold is discovered in Canterbury, will you run for the super again? I do not mean that as an interrogative in the proper sense, just as an expression of my curiosity in the course of your days. It is in this spirit that I sign myself, sincerely, Crosby Wells. Kawarau, March 1864. Sir, I write with most important and indeed astonishing news. I have been in Dunstan, where I hit upon some extraordinary luck, a claim veritably shining with the colour. I am now a wealthy man, though I have not spent a penny of it, having seen too many fellows spend their dust on hats and coats, only to return those items to the pawnbrokers when their fortunes change again. I will not tell you the amount for fear this message is intercepted, but I will say that even by your handsome salary it is an enormous sum, and I fancy that now I am the richer brother of us two, at least in terms of ready money. What a lark that is! With this fortune I could return to London and set up a shop, but I will continue to prospect, as I believe my luck has not yet run dry. I have not yet declared the ore, and have chosen to export it from the goldfields via a private escort, which I am told is the safest route. Notwithstanding the alteration of my fortune, I am, as ever, yours, Crosby Wells. West Canterbury, June 1865. Sir, you will notice from my postmark that I am no longer a resident of the province of Otago, but have upped my sticks, as the saying goes. You most likely have had little cause to venture west of the mountains, so I shall tell you that West Canterbury is a world apart from the grasses of the south. The sunrise over the coastline is a scarlet marble, and the snowy peaks hold the colour of the sky. The bush is wet and tangled, and the water very white. It is a lonely place, though not quiet, for the bird song is constant and very pleasant for its constancy. As you may have guessed already, I have put my former life behind me. I am estranged from my wife. I ought to tell you that I concealed much in my correspondence with you, fearing that if you knew the bitter truth about my marriage, you might think less of me. I shall not trouble you with the details of my escape to this place, for it is a sorry tale, and one that saddens me to recall. I am twice bitten, three times shy, which is a less admirable ratio than other men can boast, but suffice to say that I have learnt my lesson. Enough upon that subject. Instead, I shall speak about the present and the future. I mean to dig for gold no longer, though West Canterbury is flush with colour and men are making fortunes every day. No, I will not prospect and have my fortune stolen once again. Instead, I shall try my hand at the timber trade. I've made a fine acquaintance of a Maori man, Te Rau Tau Whare. This name, in his native tongue, means the hundred house of years. What poor names we British fellows have compared to these. I fancy it might be a line from a poem. Tau Whare is a noble savage of the first degree, and we are fast becoming friends. I confess it lifts my spirits to be in the companionship of men again. Yours, etc., Crosby Wells. West Canterbury, August 1865. Sir, I read in the papers that Westland is to have a seat in Parliament, and you are running for that seat. I am proud to say I am now a voting man, sir, for my cottage in the Arahura Valley is not leasehold, it is my very own, and as you know, the ownership of land affords a man a vote. I will place my ballot in your favour, and drink to your success. In the meantime, I spend my days felling totara with 1,000 blows of my humble axe. You are a landed man, sir. You have Glen House in London, and also, I presume, your electoral lodgings in handsome Akaroa. But I have never owned a scrap before. I have been with Mrs. Wells in name, if not in deed, for nigh on 3 years, but all that time I was on the fields, and without a fixed address while she remained in town. Although my present solitude suits me very well, it is the stationary life to which I am unaccustomed. Perhaps we will meet or see each other while you are in Hokitika on your campaign. You must not fear that I will harm you, or that I will betray the secret of our father's wrong. I have told no man, and only my estranged wife, and her temperament is such that when she cannot profit from the knowledge, she loses interest in the news. You must not